that we make that that gap close so that we can present to the world the best, what we believe is the best place in the United States to host this event. So I appreciate your commitment to it and appreciate an opportunity to be here today.
Sounds like we've got not only goodwill, but voting membership on an important committee. So appreciate this discussion. Let's follow up on what the parameters actually are. I can't imagine that they are ironclad at 100,000. Given the significance of the event and the relevance to the Visitor Development Fund, it seems like there ought to be more skin in the game than that particular.
And I think, Mr. Mayor, there's a couple of areas. One, we're working with TriMet on a transit pass program to make sure that our visitors have access to our transit program. As you can imagine, the connections between Pioneer Square and the Oregon Convention Center couldn't be more perfect. And we really want to encourage as many of the participants and visitors to the city to use that as the main point of connection. But our transit pass program runs through this through Travel Portland as well. And the other issue is just overcoming kind of the usual formula that Travel Portland uses to determine how much money should be put in is based on hotel rooms and number of visitors and so on. So we'll need the help of the council members to push on that as much as possible.
Of course, we have the benefit of being the principal source of their funding. So we have at least an opportunity to have that discussion. And I was struck when they came out and testified at our budget hearing that they are among your biggest boosters in terms of what this means for Portland, what this means for our brand, for tourism, for filling hotel beds, and that's typically what they help invest in. So I think they've made the case as eloquently as anyone about maybe lifting that cap.
That people have been to some more?
Yeah, a couple of things. First, isn't it refreshing to have a budget where we're actually looking for the things that weren't funded as opposed to the things that were? When I first came on board a few years ago, that was the super cuts budget where we were building up from zero from everything, and that was quite the contrast with this year. So, you know, this is the wood I'll knock on, but I like this new atmosphere of not scarcity. Anyway, one thing I was wondering about was in the police packages, one of the ones that wasn't funded was the body-worn camera system implementation. And I was just wondering, is that going to be covered a different way? Or, I mean, they're going to have to do that. So
forward, $846,000.
Right, but they asked for an additional $227,000.
And I think if I got this right, the conclusion is we know we're going to need more funds, but we don't know how much more.
So it's just,
and we're waiting for the legislature. In fact, I'm going down to testify on Thursday. We're waiting for the legislature to get the legal issues resolved about how we use body-worn cameras. We've got some money in the account to start the program, and we know we'll need to spend more, both in terms of servers to load the data and people to manage all that. But until the legislature tells us what data has to be stored for how long, it's still a question mark. So we've got enough money allocated already from the previous decision by the council that we can certainly get started. I think I've got that right, Andrew. Is that, yeah.
Okay. I figured it was something like that. Thank you. And then the other thing is, so I'm active in my neighborhood district association and through them in Northwest Northwest, which is where I live. I keep getting reminders about how ONI didn't get the money that they were asking for, specifically related to diversity and civic leadership program, neighborhood small grants, youth program, disability program. They were asking for some additional funding in that area. Which part of the reason I brought up that contingency earlier is that they're not asking for very much in some of these programs, and it looks like there's still a little bit at play. But I noticed overall, looking at the budget, that it does seem to reflect a priority that moves away from this using the city as a granting organization. I was wondering if these decisions were sort of part of that overall philosophy or if there was something else going on.
Yeah, I think that's a good discussion topic for us as a council and as a budget committee. And what I've tried to do over these three budgets, and there's a lot of agreement I think on the council about this, is one, keep moving things that are ongoing commitments and expenditures from one-time column to ongoing, get real about that. And we're almost there. We've still got a few items, I think, that most of us would say, that's an ongoing expenditure. We ought to move it over into the continuing column. Focus on basic services, which we certainly have done in this budget proposal. And then special appropriations ought to be truly special one-time things. The indoor track and field championship is a classic case. And the psychiatric emergency facility capital commitment is a classic case. And there are times where it's appropriate for the city to be a grant-making partner. I think the 3 to PhD project between Concordia and Portland Public Schools is so catalytic in its effect on the kids in our city that, just like the David Douglas pilot project at Earl Boyle's, it's appropriate for the city to be a grant-making partner in those kinds of community ventures. But we also ought to be wary of being a grant maker. And in contrast, by the way, the county board has a policy of never making any such grants. And they have a surplus that's roughly the same size as ours. So that's one of the discussion topics between us and the county over the next few years as well, is who takes on these community ventures? What's the policy at each government about being a partner? But we've tried to keep shortening that list of special appropriations to things that truly were one-time, unique, and appropriate. There's judgment involved in each of those, but I think as a general policy, that should be a short list.
Okay, so
and Rob, I just want to point out two things. One, ONI is receiving about $1.1 million and six new staff, you know, as part of the proposed budget. For a number of different programs, marijuana permitting program, you know, the East Portland Action Plan, and other
things.
None
of which are on their priority list.
But I actually wanted to point out, because I think it's important for people to realize, ONI did not formally request the funding, the sort of the right budget for ONI.
Uh-huh.
It did not come in as a decision package, nor will you see it in here.
I noticed
that. It was put into a memo, which puts it in what I would, as the budget director, categorize as an informal request that they wanted to put out there. But again, it was not formally requested, and again, is not funded.
And the reason for that is because ONI followed the mayor's budget guidance or requirement that they would have to propose a cut in order to be able to fund an ongoing request, and there isn't anything left to cut. I will second your motion that it should be funded. In fact, it should be now $230,000 for ongoing for ONI, and that's my highest priority in terms of adjustments. The reason it should be $230,000 rather than $200,000 is because the proposed budget includes funding for a new diversity and civic leadership partner, but at a level which the current partners say is unsustainable. So the right budget for ONI included an extra $30,000 for each of the current five partners. If we're going to fund a new partner, which I believe we should be funding them at a sustainable level rather than at the lower level. So I agree with you that if we're really focusing on equity and on outreach to underserved communities, that's a high priority.
And I guess I would just sort of to snowball even further, talk about a little bit about how ONI is sort of something that's, I think, a little bit unique to Portland and really works great. And I think that, you know, the small grants program, these are actually going out to neighborhood districts and doing really great work in citizen engagement. And it's in terms of the size of the allocation we're talking about, this is a relatively small allocation, and I think it has a big payout. So anyway, I would just sort of speak in favor of that.
So I guess, you know, just in the spirit of this discussion, I am puzzled why there was a mental health specialist in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I can't quite find a rhyme or reason for that.
I can explain this. It's a support for the members of the Community Oversight Advisory Board. It's part of the DOJ settlement agreement funding. As I mentioned, or as became clear, the other position to provide support for the Community Oversight Advisory Board has been located in the Office of Equity and Human Rights. The decision was made to put the mental health specialist in with the other, with crime prevention specialists as part of the programming. It's debatable whether it belongs there or in the Office of Equity and Human Rights, but the point is that people experiencing mental illnesses need particular help in order to be able, or particular accommodation in order to be able to participate in something as stressful and overwhelming as the Community Oversight Advisory Board. And so that was the rationale for creating that position.
So this is to provide mental health support to members of the Community Oversight Advisory Board?
So you can think of it like a translator. If we had a member of the Community Oversight Advisory Board who did not speak English, that we would be needing a translator for that person. For people with mental illness, experiencing mental illnesses, which can be cyclical, at times they may need accommodation in order to be able to help explain the what's on the agenda, to be able to participate remotely if they happen to be in the hospital at the time of the meeting. There are various supports that are needed by people with ongoing mental illnesses that we don't currently have the expertise. So it's not prescribing medications or doing therapy or anything like that. It's simply the logistics and recognizing that people experiencing disabilities may need particular accommodations and particular assistance.
I guess if we have one of these people in Office of Equity and we have one in Office of Neighborhood Involvement, it seems like a little bit overkill. I mean,
there are two different positions. One is providing support for the COCO and the COAB in just logistically in setting up the meetings, doing the minutes, those kinds of things. The other is specifically to help the members of the community to provide accommodations for the members of the Community Advisory Board.
So Mayor, technically, I mean, just to go back to, I guess, the admonition, we're not deliberating, but we're the first phase of this was to shine a light on your proposed budget, give the council an opportunity to ask questions, make sure we understood the items. My understanding is the next phase is for you to announce any adjustments that you plan to offer based on what you've already heard up until this point, and then to invite your colleagues to address any, to foreshadow any amendments or any adjustments that they have on their list for sort of discussion at a high level, because again, we can't deliberate, but with the hope that then over the next few days we could continue those conversations and see if we can get to a consensus budget.
Correct. And I plan to take in what we've discussed here, take in the testimony we hear tomorrow at the public hearing, and file a set of small adjustments based on all that with the proposed budget when we file on Thursday for council documents for next week. So again, other amendment proposals can still come in after that, but I would encourage people to try to communicate with me so if I can get it into an omnibus package, I'll try.
Mayor, there are certain issues you can take off the table today just so that they aren't on any of this list and are not subject to further debate?
I don't think I should do that given that this is a work session, so yeah.
I have just a follow-up comment to Commissioner Saltzman. Maybe a better analogy would be the navigators that you have at the Gateway Center. That's kind of the specialized assistance that this position is intended to provide. I also wanted to announce to folks that I and to the public that I have sent around memos regarding the positions that I had been requesting as ongoing funding from the general fund in both parks and development services, two positions for the tree code, which we are, in light of the challenges that we have in providing sustainable wages for parks workers, we're proposing to fund those from a reserve fund in the urban forestry program. Those would be funded from the urban forestry fund for 1 year and then hopefully changed to permit funded for ongoing. So I'm withdrawing that request. I'm also asking an amendment to the development services request from the mayor's proposed budget that he had proposed taking money from the land use services reserves for both the land use services positions, the two positions in land use services and the several positions in the neighborhood inspections program. BDS and I get very concerned about mixing and matching different reserve funds. We have specific reserve funds for each of our programs. And so again, we're proposing to fund the neighborhood inspections, both the enhanced inspections and the extremely distressed properties from the nuisance inspection, from the inspections program reserves. That would be for 1 year. I hope I have commitment from the council that these are very, especially that they're very important positions and that we'll be coming back with another request or an ongoing look next year.
Appreciate that. Just want to again thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for those clarifications, and it is, again, important for each of us to not just look at this proposed budget overall, the $3.7 billion, the $49 million of new revenues that we're allocating, but also look back into our own bureau budgets and propose those kinds of reallocations if you see fit, so that we can make those adjustments in the final adopted budget as well. So I'm working on one or two of those in PDC. Appreciate you doing that in BDS as well, and just want to encourage us all to do that.
So I have a couple of other comments, if I may. I do support the $118,000 for the paralegal position, having seen how helpful those can be at a lower cost than a full attorney position. I think that would be wise and prudent if we were able to find money for that. I have a question regarding the $100,000 for one-time money for Ban the Box outreach, and I'm wondering how that compares with our outreach money for sick time, and including the BOLI contract. So I'd be interested, not now, but coming back, if you could get me that information. I don't think we had anything like $100,000 for sick time implementation. And so with lessons learned on how to do that, that had to outreach to absolutely everybody in the city because all employees are covered as well as all employers. The Ban the Box might be a slightly more targeted outreach to employers for sure, but also to returning citizens. And so I'm wondering whether $100,000 is necessary. Similarly, there's the $37,500 for protected sick time allocation, that which I appreciate, Mayor, that you're continuing to provide some support to my office for that added work that we're doing. It's touch and go whether it's going to get passed through the legislature this year. I don't know if anybody's following it, but it's probably one of the more interesting and thoughtful discussions that's happening at the legislature. So there's a possibility, again, that that won't be needed, and I would request a budget note that if it isn't, that that money go back into contingency. I want to note that the Symphony in the Park is not a parks request. It's really a special appropriation. And similarly, I'm questioning the river access being a special appropriation. Where was your thought as to who would be running that process?
Good question. I mean, that could be, it will have to be most likely a joint venture between parks, perhaps PDC, and at least those two. Yeah.
That was what I thought. So maybe putting that in parks and putting this symphony into special appropriation, it's a matter, it's doesn't matter all that much. I appreciate the money going, but right. Just to be clear,
Can I just yield on that point? There is a third bureau that does have a particular interest in the river, and that's the Bureau of Environmental Services. We've not yet been briefed on this issue. We are doing a lot of habitat work, restoration, river stuff, so we'd want to see if we can align up on that one. And also, there's a lot of permitting issues, as you know, Mayor, that are implicated whenever you do this. So at some point, we look forward to getting the briefing and then seeing what if any, value we bring to this.
Just a quick note, the beach access actually is in the Parks Bureau budget. We just did not update it on this spreadsheet. So it is in the river access money is in the Parks Bureau budget. It was moved. We just didn't catch it on this sheet.
My understanding is it's not yet decided how that money is to be allocated. It wasn't a parks request. So it was added, in fact, in response to community testimony, which is cool to see when citizens showing up does make a difference. So I appreciate your point, Commissioner Fish, that certainly BES needs to be involved in that. I want to make sure that money for VOS, which was missed out of the Portland Development Commission money, gets added back. That's $30,000. I am continuing to be concerned that our special appropriations that go on contracts don't have cost of living involved in them. So this is the same, what they're asking for is the same as last year, but eventually I think we need to look at the policy for that. And then there was one other thing which I've forgotten, so if anybody else wants to leap in, I'll
jump in. One of the virtues of this process, Mayor, is we're actually daylighting some of the conversations we'd be having privately with you, usually on bended knees with tears coming out. But we're getting a chance to sort of put our cards on the table here, and I think that's probably good for the public to see us how we manage the end game. I applaud the pillars of this budget, and I applaud the priorities. And I think of all the budgets that I've seen a mayor deliver in my tenure on the council, I think this is one of the most thoughtful and intentional budgets we've had. And I think the communication strategy around the budget has been superb. You would think less of me if I didn't ask you to consider increasing the HIF, and I'll make the case. I'm delighted that a little over 10% of our bounty is going to housing. I think that reflects an important value system. The reason that I think we should increase the HIF, though, which is the Housing Investment Fund, is that you have set some very bold goals in terms of new construction, and ultimately we're not going to dig our way out of this hole unless we add more units. And the challenge that the Housing Bureau has is that the dollars they currently use are heavily encumbered. So as we've learned in the course of looking at how to boost production, we know that TIF, tax increment finance dollars, can only be spent in 15% of the city. So that does not help us address East Portland, east of Lentz. And we know that the federal dollars come with lots of strings, which have the unintentional effect of raising the cost of construction, just the compliance issues with the federal dollars. So Commissioner Saltzman has been leading on this idea that with a locally funded pot of money that has fewer restrictions and can also be used in a nimble way, addressing projects as they come up, gap financing, grant financing, even revolving, that we can be opportunistic in this marketplace, acquiring and holding land, providing gap financing for projects in the pipeline, and promoting innovation. $2.5 million is a healthy down payment. I don't want to diminish that. And the overall allocation for housing is, I think, strong. I would argue that if we give serious consideration to matching the county's contribution, so we start with $10 million. And there's no logic to $10 million other than it is something that the city and the county have said would be an aspiration. The additional unrestricted dollars gives us another tool, again, that's flexible and allows us to build more units. So that's one. Number two is a couple of years ago, we asked all bureaus to take a 10% haircut. And that, at the Regional Arts and Culture Council, had a pretty significant negative impact on what they call their project grant program. Last year, we in a more challenging budget environment, we continued that the RAC grant. This year, we've taken the $250,000 out of the budget altogether. Let me make a case for reinstating it. 200 of the $250,000 funds the project grants. This is separate from the other grant making they do and entirely separate from the grant making that's funded by the arts tax. There are two reasons to like this program. One is it funds emerging artists and smaller groups that for whom up to $6,000 makes a difference. The second is that it is the biggest diversity play at RAC. That is, the largest number of minority and women artists who are seeking to get a foothold in their careers access this pot of money, which makes a difference in nurturing careers. It's $6,000 with a ceiling. It's met a lot of the values that RAC has established. $200,000 of the $250,000 goes to project grants. I think it's been a successful program. I would argue that that since it is not backfilled through the arts tax, it has its own standing. The other $50,000 is $25,000 for Right Brain and $25,000 for Work for Art. I think those are valuable programs. Right Brain is getting great success, and the additional funding this year from all pots will allow more schools to participate. $25,000 isn't going to make or break that program. $25,000 for Work for Art would go on top of about $200,000 by contract we give RAC for Work for Art. $25,000 isn't going to make or break that program. I think the $200,000 for the project grant program is a significant loss, and so I would argue that be reinstated. I strongly support $100,000 for the Rose Festival, and I join with at least one of my colleagues and perhaps two in supporting the right side, the additional funding for ONI.
Thank you. Appreciate those points. Let me actually respond to a couple of things there, because I think, again, makes us go back and all do some homework. Couple of things I'm thinking about, and I think we all ought to think about. This budget has risen because of improved economic conditions. Although we budget with the forecast we have, to paraphrase a notorious statement that came out of the White House once, we budget with the, we forecast with the budget we have, so we don't know what the fall bump will be. We don't know what next year's budget will be, but I believe that the economic conditions of the city mean that this won't be our only budget in which we are strengthening what we do rather than thinning it, and I like that too, Rob. So I guess I would urge us not only to keep the eye on the big picture of the overall budgets, because it's not $6 million we're putting into housing, it's $100 million that we're putting into housing. And then also think about some other trends. One is private sector leverage, private and nonprofit sector leverage. I think it's incumbent on us, if we make this commitment in parks, as I said earlier, to go out and ask the private sector to step up. I think the same thing, frankly, is true in the arts. I've been to a number of arts organization fundraisers this year, and the economic conditions are blessing them as well. I'm very proud of my wife because she was one of the co-chairs for the Symphony fundraiser. They had a goal of raising $400,000 at their annual event, and they raised $700,000. The same thing happened at Artists Rep. I think we're seeing, you know, the arts organizations able to go to their fundraising base and do more, and we need to ask them to keep that up because the community needs them. Another issue, and it really bears on the housing question, Commissioner Fish, and that is, I think we each need to go back to our bureaus, as I need to do with the police bureau about body cameras, and say, we want you to do this. There's 365 days in this year. How far are you going to be by halfway through the year or all the way through the year? I'm pushing PDC, for example. As you may recall, in my State of the City speech, I was trumpeting the fact that they'd finally issued RFPs for and gotten developers selected for four parcels out of the many pieces of property, 30-some, that PDC owns in Lentz. Great. Let's get things going at Lentz at long last. I'm now pushing them, and they're responding, but it takes time, to get those projects into construction before the middle of next year. So there's the question for Commissioner Saltzman and the Housing Bureau is, as we give you, the Housing Bureau, more resources, what is your capacity to actually get those dollars out the door in committed projects where the money has to be spent this fiscal year? And from my experience with PDC, it takes longer than any of us would like to go from budgetary decision and council direction to actual expenditure and construction. So we need to look at that trajectory question of, we're serious about more housing. The county's going to give us more resources. Thank you, Chair Kefouri, for your proposed budget, assuming that they pass their budget. We're committing more resources to housing. We've committed additional tax increment funds in some of our districts to more housing. What's our capacity to actually get those projects in the ground? And as you can tell, I've got some energy about that issue, and I'm pushing the agency I work most with, the PDC, but I think that's a question for all of our bureaus. Okay, the council's making this budgetary commitment. Go. You got 365 days. Tell me where you're going to be on day 200.
Yeah, let me. This is a great discussion. This actually doesn't happen when we're having our private conversations, because right about now, one of your aides comes in and says you have another meeting. So, we have a chance for a longer discussion. So, I totally agree with you in terms of prioritizing the whole housing budget and looking what you can get out the door. I have a slightly different view of the HIF, which is, I think it's uniquely a fund that you endow with one-time money. And if I had the power, I'd put $50 million in it, endow it. And even if we couldn't get the money out the door, I would then charge, I think the council would charge Dan with finding unique and innovative ways of getting that money out. But we don't have, this is a history-making opportunity to endow it. That's it. And once it's endowed, particularly if it's recycled, it actually doesn't have to be replenished on the same regular basis. To your point about the arts, and I wasn't going to say anything about Symphony in the Park, because I know how near and dear this is to your heart. But the reality, and I think every mayor gets to have a Symphony in the Park, but the reality is, under the arts tax, we now provide 3.8% of the Symphony's base budget. So we have actually done exactly what you've said, and 3.8% towards a goal of 5% of operating support through the arts tax. So I would respectfully say for them it's double dipping, but I think a mayor has a right to pick an event, even though I think we should be careful about picking one event over another event, because you might like the symphony, I might like, you know, dance or the opera. But the reality is, we are providing more operating support for the big institutions through the arts tax, and that's what the public said they wanted that arts tax to do. We're at 3.8%. What we are not doing is providing the seed money for the struggling artists who aspire someday to be established. And that's why I think both from an equity play and from a kind of a seed fund concept, the $200,000 for RAC has proven its worth time and time again. That's just the only distinction I would draw.
Could we ask RAC to reprioritize?
Every time we discuss budget issues, particularly around the arts, the question comes up, well, could RAC reallocate money, do it? And I actually think at some point we should just fund a performance audit, track all their dollars, their positions, so that we don't have this at an anecdotal level, because obviously as the liaison, I will give you the cup half full. You might have a different view looking at staffing and numbers. But I think we need harder, better science on that. The only thing that troubles me is that I think it's a better practice to give someone lead time to have that conversation rather than to do shock therapy. And so if the view is that you want to replace one funding stream with another over time, my preference is you signal that and then create a pathway. And that includes sitting down with them, looking at their existing programs. Their budgets are heavily prescribed, sort of like housing budget. But I can't sit here and tell you for sure that Eloise could take a savings here and move it over here or cut a program. Remember, every program they've got has a constituency and typically had a champion in this building urging them to do it. My preference would be give them a softer landing and then have the discussion about how to allocate their overall budget. Again, understanding that as the arts tax receipts improve, we are meeting the goal of providing a better contribution to the established arts groups. I want to make sure that the emerging arts groups are also getting a hand up in our budgeting.
Just a few comments. One is that I just wanted to say that I will be incredibly grateful if this council approves a budget that has this kind of level of investment in transportation. Not only would this budget pay for very much needed paving and safety work, I think it will also give us a lot of credibility with the public. In our conversations about transportation funding in the community this past year, we heard a lot of people say, if transportation is such a priority, why don't you dedicate more general fund to it? And frankly, they had a point. So by prioritizing transportation in this general fund budget, I think that we will buy a lot of credibility with the public on the general transportation funding issue. I do have a concern about not funding all of the 26 firefighter positions ongoing. We cut those positions 2 years ago. Fortunately, we were able to extend them because of a grant, but we cut them when we were in budget cutting mode. And now that we're not in budget cutting mode, I am concerned about the message I think it sends to the firefighters to not fund them all one time. And I don't think that anybody intends to cut those 13 positions next year, but I think that I would like as many of us as possible to make it clear that we do not intend to do that. I will not reintroduce the amendment that I offered last year to cut the Drugs and Vice Division because I want to get my one loss record and 3-2 votes to a better place. But I still think that, investing money in work that's not so the combination of drugs and violence, but strictly trying to get drug traffickers, particularly drug traffickers, is an investment in the ongoing war on drugs that's been a failure for 40 years. I want to just give a heads up about a possible contingency request that PBM might have. There's a state grant we get every year, the Emergency Management Performance Grant. We were told 2 months ago we'd expect the same funding that we got last year, which is $385,000. We were told 2 weeks ago, no, you might get $207,000. We've been going back and forth with the state for the past couple of weeks, and we think that we'll get most of that back, but we could be asking for something in the neighborhood of $50,000, and the decision, state won't make the decision until next month. Also, I think maybe we should give a shout out to the business community because it's largely the increase in business taxes that is allowing us to have a better budget. So I think that it's a shout out to all of our profit. We should give a shout out to all of our profitable businesses.
supported by their city council over the course of the recession. So, and I want to comment on your firefighter issue. I know that the chief is working very hard on looking at alternative staffing options and the rapid response vehicles and what they do. And so I do think that having an forcing another conversation next year of how what does our fire bureau look like ongoing is a good strategy. So I support the mayor's allocation. I remember the other thing that I wanted to bring up, and that is the Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation building that I know is a priority for Commissioner Fish. Their request had been to allow SDCs to forgive the loan. The challenge is that it's not a building that the city owns, so we're not allowed to use SDCs on system development charges for properties that the city doesn't own. So I would I would make that request as a general fund ask. It's a one-time forgiveness, and it actually will, they're wanting to pay off the previous loan so that they can start on another capital expansion. So we could either forgive the loan or put a down payment on their next capital expansion, which provides educational resources.
I just want to thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for putting that on the table. The Oregon Rail Heritage Foundation rescued three soon-to-be homeless steam locomotives that for historical oddity reasons we own. I think we've owned them since 1958 or something. One of them was the SP-4449, which was the engine which led the bicentennial train across the country in 1976. They were to be homeless. A group of citizens stepped up and said, here's the deal. We'll raise over $5 million, build a facility, and handle all the stuff if you partner with us. We'll own and operate the facility, and we won't charge the public anything to come see your treasures. So I deeply appreciate, Commissioner Fritz, you putting that issue on the table. We structured it as a loan at the front end because that was the available dollars, but the goal was at the end, if they met their target, to try to give them some relief. And I would hope that this becomes a framework for all other partners where we say, if you can raise that kind of money to solve one of our problems, we'll help you with the last dollars so you're not encumbered as you seek another round of fundraising. Their next fundraising project, as I understand it, would be expand capacity within the building and do some things which, again, would make it more beneficial to the public that gets access for free. So I would hope, I would second that, Mayor, and urge that we prioritize that.
Thank you, Commissioner. With it being close to onset, have you been to the Rail Heritage Foundation Budget Advisors? It's really a very fun place, even for. Chris, have you been to the Rail Heritage Foundation and visited our trains, your trains? I mean, when I was describing this to somebody at the Connemucks Park opening on Saturday, I said, these are your trains. You need to go see them. And they really are quite spectacular, and you get to go right up to them. So I think it's a great project. So I would suggest that a building that houses our assets is really a higher priority, perhaps, than some of the other special appropriation requests. Particularly, I'm concerned about helping to fund the psychiatric facility that's a legacy project, although it's certainly something that our police will potentially find helpful in helping people with experiencing mental illnesses. It doesn't expand the capacity of the inpatient beds, and it is a privately run facility. So if we're looking for scarce dollars to provide assistance for capital improvements, I would suggest that's a place that perhaps we could lower the amount to that legacy facility and fund the Rail Heritage Building.
Just one quick anecdote, Mayor. My wife has a friend who lives somewhere in the state of Washington, and we went to their house for dinner, and the spouse was retired and had turned the entire house into a hobby, which is model engines and cars, and it's really quite extraordinary, and the entire house practically, and the prize of his collection was the SP-4449, which apparently to scale is quite a desirable engine.
Mayor, like Commissioner Fritz, I forgot one more thing I wanted to mention, which is we've been criticized for doing any special appropriations, and I think that we should be very careful and judicious with them. One that I'm very proud to support is the 3 to PhD appropriation. There's been a debate raging about education policy in this country for the last 15 years, and there's one camp that says that the only way to improve education is to fire a lot of teachers. but serious researchers who have looked at countries around the world that supposedly have, allegedly have better education systems, have found that it's not that they fire lots of teachers, it's that, among other things, they take teacher preparation very seriously. And one of the criticisms of a lot of American teacher preparation programs is that they don't involve enough practical experience. And what Concordia is doing here is making sure that these teachers in training get hands-on practical experience in a school right on site. And I think that's exactly what should be happening in teacher education. So I'm very proud to support that.
Can I follow up on that for a sec? There is an ask in this budget cycle which is not funded, and that's the College Ready ask that we heard something about. Recently, I went out to Gresham High School and saw it in action. They had some AmeriCorps students. And it reminded me a little bit about the a similar program we invest in is the through Cash Oregon, we invest in tax preparers for low-income families to make sure they qualify for the earned income tax credit. And so it's an indirect way that we access a bigger pot out here. It struck me that the genius of the College Ready program is in coaching low-income kids, many of them first generation to go to high school, first generation to go to college, facing other barriers. We're opening the doors of opportunity with a fairly small investment, hoping that they get into the college of their choice, and then with education have opportunities thereafter. I know it didn't make your budget this year. There's been a tradition, Mayor. Last year we invested in David Douglas. This year, 3 to PhD, which I enthusiastically support. I would hope that the message back to them is that good ideas percolate a little bit in our budget, and that each year we pick one that's a winner. And I would say my early favorite for next year is College Ready, given what I saw. And I hope all my colleagues get a chance to see them in action. But maybe the message back to Ken Thrasher and others is, you have our attention, it just doesn't make the cut this year.
Well, let me mention something that I want us to do as a council, and that is, we get deeper into some of these issues in the budget process than we do during the rest of the year sometimes as a council, even though one or more of us may be working on it. And there are some big picture topics that I want us to have these kinds of work sessions where we have staff and resource people available to us that are non-budgetary and non-bureau specific, but end up having a big effect on what we do. Or in fact, bear directly on bureau programs in some cases. One of those is infrastructure funding. We have a parks infrastructure funding problem. We have a transportation infrastructure funding problem. We have a public facilities infrastructure problem, which we may be addressing in part with our Portland building plan, but it's not the only problem we have. So that's a big picture topic we've got to address. The legislature and the Congress may or may not do anything this year about transportation funding, but we know we have to. We know we have a giant maintenance and capital investment need in parks. SDCs will cover some of that, but nowhere near enough. So I want us to work as a board and as a body on that issue and to bring in people and discuss those in depth as we, again, sometimes do in the budget process. Another one's the housing affordability. And you're making a very good case for why we need to invest in the HIF, but what do we as a community do to address the housing affordability issue in policy? Again, we're waiting on the legislature on a couple of topics. In policy, in regulation, in fees, and in investments. I think we need to take a big picture look at that issue because it's a community crisis and it deserves our attention. Another one, a little more remote, but nevertheless, I think we make the connection, and that is education and workforce. We have a role in the workforce issue. We do some of that through PDC. We do some of that through partnerships. There are things that are working in the community on that issue, and we all believe the 3 to PhD model, just like the Earl Boyles Early Learning Center model, is a good prototype. I think it is appropriate for the city to support those prototypes, but there's some things going on in public education and workforce development that are really great, and we ought to figure out how we partner with them better. I was just at the groundbreaking at Franklin on Saturday for their renovation. I was stunned by the statistic there, just like I was heartened by what I heard at Roosevelt. The graduation rate at Franklin High School is now 85%. For African American students, it's 92%. What are they doing at Franklin that we need to do in the rest of our school system for kids of color? I want to know, and I think you do. I bet you do too. So we need to have those policy level discussions on issues that bear very directly, like infrastructure funding, and that involve partnership, like housing, and that involve leverage and partnership like education and workforce. So I want to, after the budget season is over, schedule a sequence of these kinds of discussions where we get down into that level of depth, and some of us have particular expertise and things to bring to that table and people we'd like to hear from.
Mayor, the lore is that former Mayor Vera Katz loved the Tuesday work sessions, and Betsy Ames told me there were quite a lot of them. My sense, having served with Mayor Adams, was he hated them, so they were very rare. Maybe you can bring the pendulum back, so somewhere in the middle, because my own experience with these work sessions at the bump, this budget, and other times is that it does allow us as a group to go deeper into subjects and have these kinds of conversations, which we just don't have the opportunity otherwise. And so I applaud your inclination there, because I think we do some of our best thinking as a group together. We can't make decisions, but I think this is hugely valuable, these kinds of sessions.
Other topics that you think ought to be on that list, please.
I had one other follow-up on Commissioner Novick's point about street paving. And this gets back to sort of earlier conversations about the long-term ramifications of not making improvements where they're needed desperately now to the streets. And I'm just wondering, and maybe somebody from PBOT, if not the commissioner himself, can answer this question, how much in sort of future savings is the city getting by paving these streets now when they're still pavable rather than reconstructing them later if we had not spent this money now? This is just something for, I want citizens who live in Portland to understand that the decision-making here is actually saving the city tens of millions of dollars.
That's an excellent question, and I wish I knew off the top of my head exactly how many lane miles we were going to be paving in the three paving projects we're talking about, but if you can do grind and pave projects, which these will be, they range between like $100,000 per lane mile to like $400,000 per lane mile, then you avoid having to rebuild the street entirely, which is $1 million to up to $4 million per lane mile.
So it's so 10 times multiplier.
It can be close to that, yes.
So you're looking at the $9 million that's being spent now for street paving, potentially saving the city in the somewhere in the range of $75 to $90 million if we had not done this work.
Well, at a minimum, I would say the $30 million, and it could be a lot more than that.
Other Kate, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think this was a valuable meeting. And and I also want to put in a plug for having your citizen advisors be a part of the entire, year of a budget events, which would include the bump sessions, because that way you're really getting the citizens looking at the budget through the whole year, and so there's no like gap where people go, oh, they're putting together deals, deals under the table or whatever. And under the table is the wrong term, because that sounds more underhanded than I mean. But anyway, the point is that I think it's good to have us here if you think so. And but it's better if we're involved through the whole year.
Thanks for your amazing volunteerism. Hopefully your two colleagues didn't want to jump you and say, stop, don't do it. Because if you're all willing to spend more time working with us, we value your advice.
Yeah, I would just echo Katie's remarks. I think in past years, we would go through the process with the bureaus and provide our input, and then the mayor's budget was a little bit of a black box to us. We typically got one meeting with the mayor, but I think daylighting it here at least gives me an important sense of closure, and that we've got the last stages of it finally tuned. So thank you.
Chris, I'm a little disappointed. I don't think you referenced the Portland plan in this meeting. Would you like to correct the record?
I commend the mayor and Commissioner Fish, and I certainly supported having this work session. I think it sets a new standard for our budget process, having this. It's the first time that we've actually had our budget advisors come back and say, well, what did you hear and what do you think of the mayor's budget? Just so you know, I think it's designed. The mayor's proposed is kind of a black box for a little bit for the 2 weeks where he's putting it together, and that's okay, as long as we then have this session where it's out in the open as to what's commendable, which is the vast majority of it and which tweaks are most important to each one of us. So I appreciate that the budget office and all of you for participating, and I certainly agree that having you involved in the bump discussions. The other piece that I want will make sure that I do is getting back to my Bureau's budget advisory committees after the budget to make sure that they understand that they were heard, that they were valuable, and here's what the council decided and why. I think many of us, we accept that we won't always get what we want. We need to understand that it was heard, considered, and why the decision went one way or the other. So thank you very much for participating in this.
So just a reminder on logistics. And the mayor at the end of this will continue the budget committee. We have the hearing, as I mentioned, tomorrow night here at 6:30 in council chambers. We will be filing the approved budget, which will be heard next week on the 27th. We'll be filing that with the mayor's office at the end of the day Thursday. So I think any of those sort of additional conversations that need to happen in advance of that filing. And then I think, as the mayor requested, amendments by Monday. And again, the city budget office is happy to assist any of your offices if you do have amendments, so we can make sure the language is accurate.
Well, thank you all. This has been a very helpful session. And again, Andrew, to you and your team, thanks for all the hard work. And we'll see you tomorrow at 6:30. We are continuing the budget committee meeting until 6:30 p.m. tomorrow.
Didn't want to run up here and really
not. I was almost asking you guys.
What are you doing? Mark, don't go up. That's like 6 times a day. So it's significant to do the early intervention.
Actually, he was really close with his $39 million number, yeah.